right. Today I lead.
Welcome, everyone, to Creator's Playbook. Robbie and Michael here. No, I'm just kidding. Go for it, Robbie.
No, you thief. This is my episode. I'm leading.
I stole it.
You took it from me.
Fair and square. It's just not fair.
Like the speed of light, Michael swept in and thieved the intro. I don't know what else to do. He's taking it. It's his.
In a flash, we're coming back.
Oh, wait, we're talking about... No, they don't know. Hold on, guys. Wait, before we do the music.
No, we could start over if you want.
We could. No, I like this. This is fun. It's free. It's loose.
Loose.
Not too loose.
Like
particles in physics. Guys.
Bring it back.
We're talking about the speed of light in this episode. Now we can do music.
Okay.
Speed of light.
In a flash.
That was good. Wow, Michael, you got rhythm today. Holy cow.
It's because I didn't sleep.
Yeah, I always feel way more energetic when I skip sleep and I just don't go to bed.
All right, Robbie, what do you got for us today?
Michael, tell me. And be honest, have you ever laid down on the grass, dirt, field, roof? I don't care where it was. Maybe
trampoline.
It was a trampoline.
Trampoline.
Stared up into the sky and looked at the stars and imagined what it would be like if you could be there right now, circling that celestial body in the sky.
Yes, very much. Very yes. 400,000 yes.
That's so nerdy. That's such a weird thing. Why did you do that?
Well, I've often imagined it from both perspectives. I mean, so growing up, we had a trampoline and we'd spend several nights out, not the whole night, but like just laying on the trampoline in the cool air because summers were hot and the nights were cool in California. And at least where we lived in California. And those city lights weren't terrible that you could actually see a good amount of stars. And this was before I got into physics, before I got into sci-fi. Well, no, we watched several sci-fi shows growing up that I think really influenced us. And I would dream of visiting other worlds. But I think more so, I wanted to visit space and look down on Earth from above. And just kind of, I mean, there's a lot of references like holding the earth in your hand, right, as a blueberry. But having it later in life, after having researched a lot about the Apollo program and space travel and all of our adventures, like most of the astronauts that visited the moon and looked back at the earth had like, wow, what are we doing as humans? Like, this is crazy. We should totally be reaching for the stars more because humanity is meant to expand its wings and fly.
I think there's actually a word for that. There's a word for the weird. It's an experience of feeling infinitely small when you're out in space because you put everything into perspective and you literally are a speck of sand drifting in the abyss. It's crazy.
I think the picture, the one pale blue dot from the Voyager space probe really sums it up. And the Earth is one pixel in the view of the several planets in the sun. I think it's reverence. It's awe inspiring that, hey, we're here and there is so much out there for us to explore and to see. And yeah, I was taking the garbage out and I looked up and I did this last night and I was staring at the stars for a couple minutes, just trying to imagine how far those were away. And I know I could pull out an app and like actually measure it. Like, you know, Alpha Centauri is four light years away, right?
But comprehending it visually.
Like, it's so vast. Takes forever for that light to get here. It's unfathomable.
Unfathomable. I imagine kind of drifting in space and increasing speed, you know, starting at 60 miles an hour, which is a speed that most of us as humans can't comprehend because, you know, driving in a car.
Right.
And then you also have going on a plane or on a train, you've experienced those speeds. And then imagining doubling that speed, you know, going in a plane and seeing the ground rush underneath you as you're flying faster and faster and faster. And I think the strange and almost unnerving sensation that crawls into my mind is that I could be traveling imagine the path towards the nearest star is littered with asteroids and rocks. You can picture speed. You see the rocks shooting past you. But after days, weeks, months, years, that little speck of light is the same size from your perspective. It feels like you've gone nowhere. And in that moment, in that unnerving realization of just how vast the distance of space is, it grips me in the heart and it literally like crushes me a little bit, because I've done the same thing. I've looked at the stars and I've tried to comprehend that distance and the mystery that's out there. It is the mystery that we are desperate as a human species to solve. What is out there? What are those things orbiting that far distant speck of light? And, you know, we at the moment, as far as our technology is, it is out of our reach. Mm-hmm. It literally, whether we're up in space or down here on this planet, throwing our hands up into the sky and trying to reach those stars is literally the most we can do, astronomically speaking.
Handful of us have only made it to the moon. I like the idea, though, of reaching towards the stars, far beyond the stars, and just that sense of awe and wonder that I think coming to terms of how small we are, yet how much we've accomplished as a human society, we've done some great things. And I think we've got the potential to do more. I mean, like, we could have humans on the moon in the next couple of years. I mean, well within our lifetimes. And that to me is remarkable.
It's amazing.
It's awe-inspiring.
You know, now that you think about it, I just realize everyone who's ever gone to the moon holds the record for the longest jump on Earth, because that's really what it is. It's just a really big jump. And then they're out there for weeks, months, and then they come back down and they land on the ground like, we did it. We set the record for the longest jump ever made. Or I guess it would be people on the space station. There's a guy that's been on there for like a year or two. He set the record.
Well, it was Apollo 17 or something like that that brought a golf club and made the world's longest ball drive.
That's awesome.
Oh, it was great. It was
That's
great.
Amazing. I love it. Also the most expensive driver ever made.
Probably. Farthest one.
Reaching out towards space, there's this huge draw. And for most science fiction, especially when it comes to the most popular science fiction out there, it is always out there in space exploring other worlds. And that's where people like you and me, Michael, are drawn to science fiction. We crack open those books. We watch those movies and those TV shows because that's the drive. We're drawn to imagine, because maybe now we can't reach it, but there's this hope. And I think a lot of Faster Than Light, the story of Faster Than Light, is often driven by hope. I think of the most recent stories that I've read, it's all about speed, going faster and faster, because we need to be able to explore the stars. We need to be able to reach out there, because even right now, being able to create faster than light capacity would solve a lot of problems on Earth. The faster you can go, the better it is for us as a human species.
And I think it opens up whole new worlds.
No. Wow. Really, Michael? No. I know you're a dad, but wow. Jeez.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. But no, I mean, like, I read a lot of stories where, like, you know, humanity is at the brink, and the only way to perpetuate the species is to land on other planets and start colonies and such. And I really hope we don't get to that point as a human species, because I hope spaceflight, as we delve into it more, helps us understand just how precious life is here as it currently is, and drives us to be better about taking care of the planet and such, not to get all earthy. But I think having that hope, having that like distant target, the being able to reach for the stars and obtain them, We've done that as a human species with the moon flights and space flights, and now with Mars as we send probes and hopefully people soon there. I think as we reach and reach and reach, go farther, 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 faster, 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 I think it'll bring us together and allow us to kind of overcome some of the things we have as difficulties in society. Or maybe it'll make better plot points and stories.
That's true. And what are we here, Michael, to do? What are we here, Michael, to do? That doesn't make any sense. Michael, what are we here to do, Michael? Plot points. Welcome to Creator's Playbook, special episode, Plot Points.
We're all
Faster than Light Edition. I will say, we should probably help people understand really quick, Faster Than Light, and why that's such a big deal. This is pretty common now, just because so many sci-fi talk about it. But just as a really quick summary, for those who don't know, there is an intergalactic speed limit in space. And the only thing that can hit that speed limit and not exceed it is light itself. And to put it in no uncertain terms. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's not just light. It's massless particles when they are at rest. So particles who have zero rest mass. So photons are one. I really can't think of others at the moment. Dang it. But all photons are one. Light particles.
All of those intermittent fasting particles out there are the only ones capable of going, because they have no mass. They've trimmed it all.
Yep.
But that was a
good exercise program.
Yep. This is the no mass exercise program where you excel all non-mass particles. No, wait, all mass particles from your body.
So to accelerate a body close to the speed of light, you can't get past the speed of light. That's just particles with mass, particles with actual stuff can't go that fast. It just breaks the laws of physics. But that being said, you've got invariant mass. So the mass of you sitting still, not doing anything, that's your invariant mass. That mass doesn't change. The faster you go, the more relativistic mass you have. That's imaginary mass, if we can think of it. It's just think of it as like it just takes more oomph to get you going just a little bit faster. You need more energy to get all of you plus the speed that you're already going more. So as you get closer, it just gets much, much harder to get going faster.
So when you get fast, you need more energy to go faster. And when you go even faster, then you need even more energy to keep going faster.
Right.
And then eventually the need for energy to go even faster is too much to be able to go faster than the speed of light.
It's undefined. It's infinite. It's infinite. Out there. Yeah. And I think that's what drives a lot of these, some of these plot points in stories, is that there are some theories where you take a subluminal, sub faster than light, so SLT, slower than light speed, and you do something to make that appear or work faster than light in the real life. So warping space, like warp drive, that's that idea. You what you do is you say, okay, well, we're only actually going to go 0.1 the speed of light, because that's totally doable. We can do that with current rocket technology. And then what you do is you contract space in front of you using black holes. I don't know, pick something fanciful. And you contract space in front of you and expand it behind you. So your 0.1 speed actually has a magnification factor of like 10. And now you're going the speed of light appeared by everyone else, but you're really only going 0.1 speed of light relative to yourself. Does that make sense?
That actually does make sense.
Mind
but
blown.
Wow, there's super cool.
Other ways of going faster than the speed of light.
Yep, there was one of the ways I looked up was wormholes connecting two points in space together. It yields its own issues and problems, and we don't even know if they exist naturally in nature or the resources required to make them exist. There's still some theoretical physics behind that to make that possible. But connecting to, it's like we've all seen a bunch of movies about wormholes, and the principle is always the same. There's a hole in one space, there's a hole in another part of space, you stick them together, and boom, you're there instantly. Instantaneous travel.
Right. That's taking the notion that space is four dimensions or more, and that two points in three-dimensional space can be linked to a fourth dimension by simply conjoining them with wormholes. And it works.
We're very presumptuous as a human species. We can't help ourselves.
It could be more dimensions than four.
I like to presume that there's at least 14 dimensions.
Well, that's beyond string theory, but okay. I'll go for it.
My methods are beyond your comprehension, Michael. I am a science fiction writer.
But I think that's the whole point of science fiction. You get believable, you get close enough to reality, and you use it as a plot point to make your story awesome. And as long as you live within the bounds that you set for your world, you're okay. Don't break those rules, because that's like breaking the laws of physics. I hate it when story writers, like, they come up with this really cool world, and then they live within it, and then they break those rules. And it's like, Well, that's so unbelievable.
It's such an important thing too, because like this is true of any kind of writing. Whatever story you write, you are setting up rules for your story, whether it's rules of science, like Michael was just talking about, or it could be rules of, there's like emotional rules, rules of a society, of a culture, of a character. And don't break those rules. That's the power of creativity. You're solving problems.
I think it goes hand in hand with suspend disbelief. Like we as a story reader or participant in the story process receiving it, we need to suspend our disbelief. And I think keeping to your rules and whatnot allows you to do that. Even if the physics that you're using is completely out there and not realistic at all, as long as you're realistic within the same framework that you created, you're good to go.
Yeah. Your audience will respect the setting that you've given them, mm-hmm. the parameters, the rules. And if you follow those rules, then they're okay. They understand, oh, this is something he established at the beginning. Michael, we've established the speed of light. We've explained that our story is about going faster than the speed of light. And in terms
of those
of
you following along, the speed of light is about 300,000 meters per second or 186,000 miles per hour. If that number is too large, it's about 8 minutes from here to the sun. That's how fast light takes to travel.
That's crazy. That's only like a couple hundred thousand meters per second less than my walking speed. So that's crazy. I didn't know I could go that fast. The challenge today really is to create a story revolving around breaking the speed limit, the superluminal speed limit, as it's sometimes called. I actually learned that word today, superluminal. And being able to create a story around that. Yeah. However that manifests.
Cue fancy dark music.
You don't know that it's dark. Maybe it's really happy. That would actually make the scene pretty funny.
We're in space. It's dark.
The year is 1995. Space is great. Everyone should do it. To say the tension in the room was high would be a dramatic understatement. Around the table sat figures of such contrasting varieties as to cast doubt on whether they really all had descended from the same species on Earth tens of thousands of years ago. The Mirkin's broad shoulders and wide eyes made them look like somebody was perpetually insulting their mother under their breath. The Noan sat like broomsticks at the table, their unkempt hair an extra foot above everyone else, put even the most relaxed person on edge. There were others at the table, but these were the most powerful, wealthy, and technologically advanced species on this planet. And somehow Sisha would be the one to navigate them through this emotional landfill. Because tens of thousands of years left a lot of room for conflict, grudges, and overall bad blood one against another. She just hoped somehow her own body would survive the experience. Above them, through a window, the reddish-purple ball that was their planet drifted in a sea of darkness. Too bright to let any stars peek through on the sides. The moon station, where they all sat, was technically neutral territory. And by technically, it would only take a misplaced sneeze for someone to spit out yet another argument on who really owned the moon. She sat with poise and elegance, a straight back and a slight tilt to her head in a sign of respect to the rest of the people there. In reality, her stomach twisted, turned, and boiled with anxiety. The last great war could start right here, in this very room. The world was counting on her to avoid that. In 1 year, she said, unsure if it was an earthquake or her heart that was making the room shake. Probably both. The moon was prone to shaking, and so was her heart, in moments like these. Politus B2-92 will collide with our world. The impact, in no uncertain terms, will resolve all conflicts our species have engaged in over the last several thousand years. She excelled, letting the heat drain from her body. Now is the time to combine our cultures, technologies, and beliefs in order to break the superluminal barrier and save our people, since we cannot save our planet. And that's it.
How dare you?
How dare you? You humans, so mighty. So pompous, I mean. You're not mighty. I'm mighty. We're the mighty Mirkins.
Mirkins?
Mirkins.
Descendants of the Americans?
Okay, not going to lie. I did actually base these names on different nations. The Meerkats are based off of the Americans.
Well,
Tens of thousands of years in the future.
Tens. Well, okay, there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's tens of thousands of years in the future. Strife issues. Is this like three races on one planet?
So the idea is humans at some point in history came to this planet, colonized it, and now we're looking at literally the results of tens of thousands of years of evolution. They've changed. They're probably still the same species. I know I said different species, but they are all supposed to be descendants of humans. Also dramatically changed by the climate of this planet. And the idea also is that the means by which humans used to get to this planet were sub-light. They were not faster than light means.
Do they know that this is the only planet that the humans colonized? Or is this like, you know, colony number 195 or something?
Interesting question, because we assume that this planet has had pretty advanced technology for literally tens of thousands of years. And you have to wonder, in a society like ours, with hard drives and servers keeping our information where it is, what happens to all of that over tens of thousands of years? So like, does it get lost? Do we know that if other colony ships were sent out from Earth, do they still know why? And do we even know about those other colony ships? We could assume that they themselves have sent out other colonies to other stars.
Right. I think you've painted a pretty clear picture that these colonists made it here on sublight speeds.
Yeah.
And they have yet, in the 10,000 plus years that they've been on this planet, have yet to achieve FTL as well. So there's something stopping them from achieving that. And it sounds, I mean, the tone of it was like, we've been squabbling for years. I mean, tens of thousands of years. And if we don't do something now, we are all going to die.
We're toast.
Like, whatever this asteroid or other planet is going to collide with their planet. And if we don't get off now, we're dead. So it's an interesting sense of like, we've been at war with each other. We've been fighting. We're coming together. We're in the 11th hour of existence, and we need to do something to get all of our people off this planet right away, or we're toast. So I like the painting that you did here with trying to describe the scenario and set up some rules and bounds, as well as the conflict that's there and the dilemma that these people have to survive. Now, it's also interesting that they set up this colony on the moon, but they're talking about their planet far below. Because, I mean, so obviously in 10,000 years, they've achieved space flight again and have colonized different parts of the solar system or their star system, because, Sol is our star.
Well, and it's a moon station. It's not that the moon's been colonized, but there's a station on the moon. And probably at this point, I would say it's still much easier to find a habitable planet than to colonize a barren planet. I mean, that's our situation here in our solar system. We have to start from scratch. We're literally recreating Earth, and it would take tremendous resources to do that.
Yeah, and it might not even be feasible with our current technology to try and terraform Mars because, there's just not enough gravity to make certain things work the way we expect them to here.
For the questions or directions on how to get us going, because although we have this premise, it's not necessarily clear what we do for a story, because we do want to revolve this around going faster than light. There's a couple of strategies we can use in order to pick a path on how we want to tell the story. So strategy number one is we tell the story of how they break the superluminal barrier, how they get faster than light, or we create a story based off of what their civilization now is, based off of the method that they discovered in order to go faster than the speed of light. Because you could come up with some pretty weird and wacky stuff that is way outside the bounds of what you would commonly think is going faster than light. As creators here, I think it's safe to push those bounds a little bit. I mean, we could go Douglas Adams. He had some pretty weird ideas, fun, hilarious ideas. I love them, in his Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And let's keep it open-ended in that sense. Like, we could do what we want. So those are the two strategies we can go.
Maybe adding some kind of comical twist to it. I'd love to see them as they're scrambling to discover FTL, they realize that there was this huge upburst in like the 2000s of Earth history that they actually had archives from. And they were digging through the archives in this mad dash because they were searching their knowledge as a civilization and came up with, like, you know, the Alku Berry Drive or something like that. And they realized, oh my gosh, we actually already solved it, but no one took them seriously. Let's actually build this thing and see if it works, you know? So using like their own lore to try and drive their own, because maybe in all these wars, they forgot creativity and were too busy fighting each other that they actually had to go back to pre-Earth time, or, you know, pre their planet times to solve the problem, you know?
I kind of like this idea of an individual, a character in the story. What if, oh, here we go. So it begins. I picture in my mind an actually very gangly individual, a man barely scraping his late 30s, maybe early 30s. And he is what we'll call a history diver, because the vast knowledge of Earth and its plentitude. Because before they even left Earth, there was so much information to consume that even then it was like swimming in the middle of an ocean, because eventually you get so much information saturation that there's no way to find what you're looking for because mm-hmm. there's too much. There's not enough parameters. Yeah. And what if even now, after 30-ish thousand years, you're multiplying that? And so yeah. there are people, their whole purpose is literally searching the archives and pulling out what they deem to be useful information. And they could be a main character because, as you just presented, as he's clicking, clacking away at his keyboard, some nobody, probably in a little tiny room in his office at a, you know, 50-story high skyscraper. And he's just in there doing his 8 hours a day, clicky clacking away. And he specializes in sci-fi. That's what he does. Mm-hmm. He's looking for good sci-fi stories. And they go to him. They show up knocking on his door. It's like the classic, you know, Men in Black, you know, mm-hmm. government officials, you know, he hears the knock. He like wipes he's like, oh shoot. He like dusting off the Doritos from his shirt, quickly gets up. He's like, I've been wearing these for 3 days. He like panics. He's like, it's not going to be a girl. I'm fine.
He throws a robe on.
He throws a robe on and he looks at it and it's got like ketchup stains on it. And he's like, oh man, I don't have anything clean on me. That could be the route. So this then would be the story of solving the issue.
I like the direction here. I think in this frantic rush to like, there's gotta be an urgency. I mean, like, I feel like this character that is doing all of his research, he's like writing papers on it. And that's how the governments find him. They're like, wait, this guy actually has some credible theories here, and he's just some lowly guy that just happens to love, like, you know, like, his part of his job is just catacombing history or cataloging history and like archiving it. But on the side, he runs a blog or whatnot that details some esoteric things that we lost as part of this recreance of wars and such.
One of the questions that'll help us move things along is actually, what is the means by which they're traveling faster than light? And there's a few categories we can go down. Is it tunneling? Do they create a tunnel? Because there are restrictions there that pop up. Do they use some kind of twisting, compression, and expansion of space? Mm-hmm. So it is imagined speed. So one's tunneling, one's imagined speed. Yeah. Then you go kind of into the weird territory. This is where you get to make up a means to going faster than light. And you could do some pretty weird stuff. I actually found one theory that I couldn't wrap my head around from a book by Harry Harrison. What a name. Called The Bloater Drive. And essentially what it is you expand the space between the particles of whatever the object is. You stretch it and stretch it and stretch it. And then you compress it to the point where it's supposed to be. My brain literally popped. I heard a physical crack inside of me, my consciousness. But I mean, you could do
it's
something.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I almost want to like, okay, a lot of these apparent faster than light drives come in as like warping space, right? What if we warp time instead?
Warping time. You really have a hard time not affecting one or the other. They're so
connected. Well, okay. Right. But in terms of like warping space, the main driving mechanism is to contract the space in front, expand it behind. So that's the warp drive. But what if we have a time capsule that instead like contracts or expands time in front of you and contracts it behind you?
Okay.
And so your apparent passage through space time is more instantaneous. Like you show up where you mean to be, but you didn't end up actually doing anything to get there because you were going to be there anyway or something to that extent. And maybe they figure out how to do that with the planet. Like they can contract like space time around the planet. And then they realize they can actually take their planet wherever they want by this technology.
Oh, that's actually cool.
So they don't have to move anyone. They just kind of, you know, jump their planet ahead in space time. So the collision never happens. Right. But now they need to like, you know, how do they do that planet wide or whatnot? But it's just kind of an interesting made up take. I don't know if this thing could actually really happen, but by playing with the orders of time, you might actually, but I feel like that's kind of cheating because like, that's not actually faster than light, but.
Well, it would be interesting if the technology that you developed has a minimum size limit, meaning, we found out a way to move faster than light, but it has to be bigger than a planet.
Like, right. It's like the field it affects is just ginormous. Huge. And maybe it just takes you out of space time. I don't know. Like that seems like we're kind of sidestepping the traveling the faster than light. Well, and not actually using it.
Here's the idea. Here's the thought. I actually kind of do like this let's travel with our planet theory. Mm-hmm. We know that wormholes kind of can, we know black holes are like pretty much punching a hole in space time. Yeah. They're pretty amazing things that are terrifying up close.
And we have no clue what happens on the inside.
But we do know that any high concentration of mass has a similar effect, just not to the same degree or intensity, right? So we know that a planet of sufficient size is creating a pretty significant dip.
Warp. Yeah.
Yeah. And what if we realize that, They're running the calculations. I see them in the office as they get this report. They're reading this blog from this nerd, literally a paper about, he's like, all the different faster than light theories that I've come across in my readings. And he's listing them out and they see one and they're looking at it. Maybe it's just some scientist on the team who's like lost all hope. And so he clicks on his favorite blog for a break. He's supposed to be working.
Right.
And he like, you know, he looks left, looks right. And like closes his work window, opens up his blog and like just starts reading through it. And he reads this article and it's like, oh, hey, he may have something. And they're like punching the numbers and they see if we had a significant dip, we need something big enough to create a dip large enough and then we can push it the rest of the way. So they're literally using the planet's own gravitational dip in space time. Mm-hmm. And then they'll punch it and then whoop, swallows the Earth. And they take the whole planet with them. Yeah, swallows the planet.
Oh, I mean, that could be interesting in the sense of maybe they, you know, like later on in the story, after they get out of this crisis, they realize that they could actually warp to or dip to other stars. You know, so maybe they make it their quest now to return to Earth to see what the crap happened. And they take their whole planet with them.
What a wild idea. Like I just,
so it's kind of like an inverse Dyson sphere. Like instead of building something around and you know, like you create your planet around the star, you just, well, this star is kind of not how we want it. So let's just go pick it for one.
Well, eventually you just create a fleet that's made up of your own personal solar system. You just all have to make sure you're, yeah, you just got to make sure you all pop out in the same space. And so eventually you got like 27 planets revolving this around this one star. And they're like, hey, we've created an industry of planets and they're just going wherever they want. Oh,
you take it one step farther and you maybe actually, this is how they build their Dyson sphere, is they hijack other planets that are barren from different star systems and warp them to their own.
Interesting. And then you all have them in a coordinated orbit around the sun so they never collide, but you have enough of them to pretty much get the total output of the sun as needed, at least for all the individual worlds.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of off into the weeds of like, this would be a really cool, interesting plot development that has no application for our current story at hand, but let's do it anyway.
Well, it's good that we set a premise and a possible solution. Do we want to go this way? Do we want to say they're planet hoppers? Solar hoppers, they're...
World jumpers.
World jumpers.
Planet jumpers.
Planetary skippers.
Planetary thieves.
Planetary thieves? The planet thieves.
the planet thieves. Maybe they get carried away and they just start stealing random moons because they feel like that's not going to change anything.
We find this, the story we actually write is about the people. It's just a giant, not a murder mystery, a planet murder mystery. It's so they hire investigators to be like, someone stole the second planet in our system and we need to find out who did it.
It's a whodunit murder mystery.
Who done it? Who stole our planet?
Turns out we needed that planet so that we could avoid being collided by another object in space.
Yeah.
Thus destroying our world.
Hey, if someone took Jupiter away, we would all be pretty screwed on the inner system. We need Jupiter.
Well, you know, I could see this all. Well, all right. Why didn't they just use that and like warp out the thing that was going to collide with their planet? Well, maybe that just happens to be the kryptonite that this technology doesn't work against, so they can't move that object out of the way. They have to move other things, and it's, you know,
well, if we go back to the size requirement, and it, like, it has to create a significant depression, it has to hit a certain level, right, in order for them to be able to push it the rest of the way. So I think it would be interesting, and the issue with their story is the planet is just about there. It's 99%.
It's not enough.
Yeah.
So they actually have to have the asteroid that's going to impact their planet or whatever it is. They actually need that mass.
Oh, that's interesting. If it's like the second the asteroid hits the planet, it's like, okay, the lens is enough. And then they pop it and they can focalize the field to just around the planet. That would be pretty intense as they're trying to like solve this. So the story then is them trying to find ways to increase the planet's mass by 1%. And they're like, we could ship in materials from our mining stations. And it's like, that would take us 350,000 years to get enough mass. And then they realize at the last minute, it's like they put,
it's like that they see the moon, they see the thing getting bigger and bigger. And they're like, we've got like 24 hours to make this work because like that thing's coming. And then someone's like, that's what we need.
I feel like we're cheating out our audience by doing that. It's like, come on, guys, really? It's the asteroid itself.
It has what we need. I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, it you need suspense. You need some kind of like last minute heroic, like, are the heroes going to win? Are the heroes going to make it out alive? Like, oh, Henry, crap twist moment. There you have it. Like, but is that good storytelling?
It could be. It could be an interesting twist. The problem ends up being their solution. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a cliche as old as time, but that doesn't mean we can't use it.
And now with this extra mass that they happen to capture, they could do some really interesting things later on. And that's, you know, books 4, 5, and 6 of the series.
Then they become the Planet Thieves, creating their intergalactic
heist network.
Heist network made up of dozens of planets.
But I really like the mechanic here of like, well, yeah, let's use the planet as a means for faster than light travel. I wonder, like, okay, now that they've activated the drive and they skipped ahead, but they put their planet on a higher orbit, which means it's nuclear winter. So now they've got other problems to solve, not that they've gotten out of this cataclysmic event, but they do have a really cool drive that allows them to hop their planet around.
It would be an interesting series where essentially every book is about them trying to solve the next cataclysmic event.
Right. Well, so what if they, you know, they miscalculated, they activated the drive, but they did it like a millisecond too late. So they have more mass than they were anticipating. And that instead of skipping ahead in their orbit, they skip several light years out. And now the planet's in darkness, detached from their star, hurtling through space. And they need to find a way to capture this planet back to another star system. Doesn't have to be their own, but that's kind of the dilemma they've gotten themselves into by saving themselves from one cataclysmic event.
Well, that would then, because I feel like then the story there is they're having to find a star that will, they have to find the right, right star for this planet in the right place.
Right. Right. They're now called the Star Wanderers.
Like that's, sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. That was a laugh of like, that's really cool. I like that. The Star Wanderers.
It's gonna be a good series.
It would be fun. I would actually, honestly, about these people trying not to die. We could call that book in the series Open Parking. They're trying to find a planet that has an open space in the Goldilocks zone.
Oh man. Wow. That could be fun.
Short story.
Stay tuned to the next season of Creator's Playbook as we investigate what happens when you leave your solar system.
Problems
with
ensue.
Baggage in tow. That is your planet. But they missed their moon, so now tides are out of whack.
Oh, shoot. That would be such a dramatic oversight. They're like, guys, we don't have a moon. Oh, frick. Oh, shoot. Just one. That'd be awesome. Almost comedic in the way. And our hero in every story is this guy diving into the sci-fi archives, trying to find weird stuff.
Right. They end up actually finding sci-fi where some of these problems exist and how that civilization overcame it in a science fiction sense. But now that they've got 10,000, 30,000 years on a technological edge, they can actually solve some of these problems.
Oh my gosh. Wouldn't it be so fun though? Because in this book, all you would do is reference all of your favorite sci-fi shows and books.
Yeah, and like, you didn't get copyrighted.
Well, it's like a player one scenario, right? You're just, they're references. Yeah. You can reference things. Then when it becomes a movie, that's when it gets expensive.
Right. But we'll solve that in post-processing.
The whatever production wants to make the movie, they can figure that out.
Exactly.
Anyway. I feel like we're actually okay. I would have enjoyed diving a little bit more into the characters, but we have characters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think we're okay. I think we're good to bring it to a close.
Yeah, I do too. I see a ton of possibilities on like every which way you can take this, but I like the fact that we end up with more problems to solve afterwards.
Oh, it's so good. It's like, a lot of sci-fi that I read, there wasn't a whole lot on moving the planet itself because it causes problem, and they just ignore them. They're like, no, it'll be fine. It's a foreshadow to a 7-book series of them. Like, oh, shoot, he was right. We've caused problems.
We're going to call this the Wheel of Space.
The Wheel of Space. And at every interval in time, there's an issue, a cataclysmic issue. Well, this was good. I'm glad we came up with something new and unique. I actually would have liked to have explored more of your stretching space-time. I'm sorry, just time, forwards and backwards. Yeah. I actually had a hard time imagining. I was like, I wonder where he's going with this. So that would have been fun. Maybe that's what we leave open to our listeners. What would you do? How would you solve the space, the
warp paradox? How would you get these people out of their predicament using faster-than-light technology?
How would you do that? Yep. What would be your solution to the whole problem?
And what problems would that solution cause?
Indeed. Oh, yeah. Got to be careful there. Hey.
We'll call them side effects.
Side effects. I like it.
It's the first name of the book. Side effects. Looking for an open stall is the second book.
Yeah. It's just it's just these little names to reference their issues to very like real life problems.
Right.
And then the last book is just called Consequences. Where they realize they've caused an intergalactic issue. Like the whole galaxy is in crisis because they've literally been hopping from system to system. Right. Like, could you imagine they hop into like this super hostile alien territory and they're just there? They're like, oh, hi, guys. Awkwardly showing up at the party in the middle of this great war that was happening on the other side of the galaxy.
Right. And they're like, when's the recharge going to be done? When can I push the button again?
It's like, guys, we got to go now.
Now.
And then the whole issue in that book is how do we charge the drive faster? So they're just going, man, this actually would be kind of a fun, quirky series.
Yeah.
Bigger issues.
I could see like, as part of the consequence, I mean, we could keep going forever, but as part of the consequence, they actually end up at other star systems, like in odd spots. Because this gravitational drive is gravitational dependent, like it's attracted to other gravitational mass in the solar system, and maybe one time they end up near a black hole and they're like in the depths and they've got to find
out. Shoot. Oh, that would be such a cool scene though. Like they show up circling the black hole and they get close enough to the event horizon that the rest of the universe starts speeding up and they're like, oh, well, we have got to get out of here as quickly as we can, as like literally the universe is just speeding by them.
Yep.
Oh, what a cool scene. They're looking out into space and they're like the guy, it would be our main character. He's looking out a window and he's staring at the stars. It's like, hey, Joe, the stars are moving. Do stars move? It's like, well, we are in a black hole.
And it like finally starts to dawn on him.
It's like, oh, no, we're witnessing time move.
Well, welcome to another episode of Creator's Playbook.
Where Ravi and Michael have gotten out of hand on another sci-fi jaunt. Thank you. Hopefully, this is going to be a long episode. Hopefully, you guys stuck around. We appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. You can find us through Twitter by searching for Creators PB Pod, or on Facebook by just searching for Creators Playbook. It's that simple. The hashtag for this episode will be found in the episode notes. So yeah, just look at the description. You'll see the hashtag you need to use to refer back to us. And thank you for surviving this episode with us. We know it was a little bumpy today, but we appreciate you guys, and we hope you enjoyed a little sci-fi in today's episode. Thanks for being with me on this episode. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Robbie. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed going far beyond the stars in this one.
Ooh, that's a great way to end the episode. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Creator's Playbook is a Talea Studios production. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us at contact@creatorsplaybook.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We cannot wait to see what you make.
Really, at this point, this is where that extra day of study and research would have really come in handy.
And with that, the episode is over.
Should we just end it like that? I don't know. I don't know if people understand. They're like, the professionalism of Creator's Playbook has really gone downhill in the last three months.
This is what happens when you only have like 3 hours of sleep between the three of us. I mean, two of us.